welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Mystery in this hour. Later on, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from 1959. But first, the adventures of Ellery Queen with The Adventure of the Singing Rat from January 7th, 1943 on NBC.
Romo Seltzer presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective in person. Ellery Queen again gives you a chance to match wits with him as he relates a news story of a crime he alone unraveled. And then, at the point where he was able to solve the mystery, he stops the play, gives you a chance to guess the criminal's name. In the studio tonight, we have as our guests Miss Anne Corio, glamorous screen and stage star, and Mr. Alfred D. McKelvey, prominent Eastern manufacturer. Miss Corio and Mr. McKelvey have accepted Ellery Queen's challenge to solve the mystery before the solution is revealed. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's story concerns the adventures Nicky and I had when a stool pigeon gave us incriminating evidence against Musso the Moose. I call it The Adventure of the Singing Rat.
Inspector.
Heavy.
Look who's paying a visit to headquarters. The Singing Rat.
The Singing Rat? Ah, show him in, Veely. Always glad to see the rat.
Enter, Sir Rodent.
Yes, Sergeant.
Veely, shut that door and keep it shut.
Right.
What's your song today, Rat?
Listen, Inspector, I got something big, see? And nobody can hear me, huh?
The rat's a little shaky, Inspector. He's got something for us on Musso.
On Musso? What is it, Rat? Sing.
Listen, Inspector Queen, I can tell you how to get the moose. But good, see?
Musso the Moose. Well, well.
But you got to give me protection, Inspector. Put me in stir until this blows over.
Come on, Rat. What do you got?
Tonight, see? 12 sharp. The moose will be in a parked car at the northwest corner of Broadway and Vesey Street. All you got to do, Inspector, is to hook what he's got in the upper right-hand pocket of his vest. I'll show that dirty...
Veely.
Keep me around, huh?
Put the singing rat in the cell. Book him on some charge. Make it look legitimate.
Suspicion of petty larceny, and that's no lie. Orders, Inspector?
3 men. Here at 11:30. Absolute secrecy. There mustn't be a leak. Maybe what's in that mobster's vest pocket is the evidence I've been looking for 5 years.
Why don't he show up, Moose? I don't like sitting in this parked car.
You be like me, Kagai. Big businessman. Soft, nice, easy, relax.
Yeah, Moose, yeah. But why do we gotta meet his nibs on street corners? We're wide open,
Moose. Kagai, you don't understand. That's why you're a punk and I'm a Moose of the Moose. He's important man. Sure, I can make him come up to the apartment like last week, but... He's taking a chance. If somebody sees him...
Hey, Moose, that black sedan. It's the cops.
Cops. Now keep your pants on, Cockeye.
You're much in that car. Sit still.
Cockeye, no. Don't start nothing.
I got him covered, Sergeant.
Flint, flash the light on him. All right, step out, Moose. You too, Mug. Reach for a rod and you'll be angel food before you hit the sidewalk. Come on.
Hello, Sergeant. You was sore about something. Sure, we come out.
Good evening, Musso.
Oh, he's my old friend, Inspector Queen.
Neither of them's here, Inspector.
Inspector, every time you pull in the moose, you gotta let me go again. And you know getting the tired.
Hold your arms high, Moose. Stand still and you won't be hurt. Flint, glue that submachine gun to his back so he won't get ambitious.
Aren't you?
Say, is he you nuts, Inspector? What's the idea?
All right, Veely, put your hand in the upper right pocket of his vest and take out whatever's in there.
My vest? You don't do that. I want my mouthpiece.
All right. Take your hand out of my vest. Let me go. See? Nice, Moosey. There.
Somebody sees a squeal. I find out who. He's a dead man. I kill him. I kill him.
Oh.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more, but first, Ernest Chappell.
Friends, you like to save money, don't you? And you like fast relief from a common sick headache? Of course. Well, what's saving money got to do with that? Plenty, so listen closely. Right now at your drugstore, you can get the large 60-cent size bottle of Bromo Seltzer for only 39 cents. Now, any way you figure it, that's a saving of 20% or more. And talk about quick, effective relief. But I'll let Mr. Howard B. Abel of Piperville, Pennsylvania, tell you about that. He writes,
whenever I get a common sick headache, I always take Bromo Seltzer, because I found out many years ago that there's just nothing better. Recently, I won my wife over to Bromo Seltzer, too. One day, she had a common sick headache, and the preparation she usually took just didn't seem to help her. I persuaded her to let me fix her a Bromo Seltzer. Well, she was delighted at how quickly she got relief. You can be sure there's always a bottle of Bromo Seltzer in our home.
Millions of folks feel just as you do, Mr. Abel. Which reminds me, you old users of Bromo Seltzer will want to get in on this wonderful special, too, but you must hurry. This offer is strictly limited, both as to time and quantity. So tomorrow, go to your druggist. Ask him for the regular, large, 60-cent size bottle of Bromo Seltzer. But pay him only 39 cents. Better still, get two bottles. One for your desk or locker, one for home use. And now let's join Ellery Queen and Nicky Porter as they visit Inspector Queen at headquarters the morning after the capture of Musso the Racketeer.
What's up, Dad? Why the hurry call?
Oh, Ellery, I didn't want you. I wanted Nicky.
Oh, I see.
Me, Inspector? This is so sudden.
Would you act as my stenographer this morning, Nicky? My own man's homesick, and this is very confidential. The Musso case.
Give me a pad and a couple of pencils, Inspector, and I'll be silent Susan herself.
Dad, don't tell me you finally tied the moose up to the bankruptcy racket.
I sure have.
What on earth is the bankruptcy racket, Ellery?
A cute little dodge to defraud unlucky business people.
Oh.
A firm goes into bankruptcy. A crooked judge appoints some politician as receiver. A crooked appraiser undervalues the property magnificently. It goes for a song. And everyone involved in the racket, except the bankrupt and his creditors, makes a heap of crooked money.
We've known about this ring for a long time, Nicky. Judge Lampson appoints the receiver, Phil Boyne. Boyne's a slick politician. Little lisping jerk by the name of Paul Ernie. He's the crooked appraiser. And a woman lawyer, Fanny Wicker, handles the legal end. All on the Moose's payroll. But we've never been able to prove it.
I see.
And here comes Reedy now with a singing rat. Come in. The rat dipped us off.
Right this way, Brother Rat.
Inspector, Musso's out on bail.
Keep your shirt on, Rat. We couldn't keep him in a cell indefinitely at this early stage.
But he knows I was made at Sang, I tell you. He'll get me.
He'll get nobody. Really show those four good citizens into my office.
Yes, sir. I've been waiting for this a long, long time. Enter, folks. Judge, Wicker.
Rat, get over there near the window and lie low.
Come right in.
Yeah, okay.
Judge Lampson. Come in, Miss Wicker. Mr. Boyne. Mr. Ernie. Really shut that door and see we're not interrupted.
Oh, yes, sir.
Inspector Queen, what's the meaning of this high-handed procedure? Hailing a member of the bench to your office like a felon.
I'll explain in a moment, Your Honor. Miss Wicker, I believe we had the pleasure yesterday when you showed up in court with $50,000 for Musso's bail.
Come on, Inspector. What have you got? You didn't ask me to your office today to admire my new shade of lipstick.
What a horsey woman, Ellery.
Quiet, Nicky. Notes.
And Phil Boyne. I don't see you down here very often.
Well, I always say, stay away from wine, women, and police headquarters if you want to keep out of trouble, eh, Inspector?
Mr. Ernie, what's the matter? Something wrong? You look sick. Isn't the appraisal racket good, Ernie?
No complaint, Inspector. In fact, today is my busy day.
Maybe a lot busier before sundown, Mr. Ernie. Now, last night I arrested Musso the Racketeer. In his vest pocket, I found a case full of cigarettes.
Cigarettes?
Yes, cigarettes. The Moose spokes a special brand. They bear his monogram in gold leaf. Very swanky. A moose head. One of the monogram cigarettes in the moose's case. In fact, this one on my desk here.
Yours?
Yes, Judge, here. See it?
Yes, I see it.
That one's a very special cigarette. Not like the others in Musso's case.
Looks like one of Musso's regular cigarettes to me.
Does it, Counselor? Ellery, hand me that cigarette.
Here you are, Dad. What is this, Mr. Barnum?
greatest show on earth, son. Now, this cigarette looks like an ordinary Musso cigarette, but it isn't. Its ends are plugged with little wads of tobacco, which are removable. See? In other words, it's hollow. Contains something. I wonder what it can be. Well.
Ellery, what's that piece of paper tightly rolled up?
A document of some sort, Nicky.
This document in Musso's handwriting is a payroll report.
What?
Quote, paid to Judge Eustace F. Lampson $19,000 for appointing Phil Boyne, receiver in bankruptcy.
Well,
see here.
And it's got your signature, Judge Lampson, and received that.
It's a forgery. An attempt to blacken my good name. I don't even know Musso.
Inspector, I seen the judge go up to the Moses apartment only last week.
So that's why this notorious thief and police informer is in your office, Inspector.
It was the rat. He's the one who sang.
Inspector, let's talk this over. I've got some influence, you know.
Have you, Boyne? You're going to need it.
Let's cut the salami. What else have you got, Inspector Queen?
Your signature and receipt, Miss Wicker. Bill Boyne's and Ernie's.
Let's
see that paper.
Oh, no, Judge. You'd like to get your hands on this little piece of paper, wouldn't you? Itchy fingers, Counselor? Mr. Ernie? Mr. Boyne? We'll just remove temptation. Roll the paper up again. Tuck it back into this hollow cigarette. Like this. Put back the false tobacco plugs, and we've got the evidence all ready for the district attorney.
Well, I don't admit a thing.
I've been in politics a long time, Inspector, and I've seen a lot of wise cops come and go.
Prove it. Take it through the court.
What do you intend to do, Inspector?
I want Musso. The DA will go easy on any one of you who gives evidence to break Musso's power and put him out of circulation. It's up to you four.
Ellery? What's the matter with the singing rat?
He's backing away from the window.
Hey!
What's the matter?
The guy in that building across the street's aiming a rifle at me. Through the window. He's gonna shoot. Hey, Boyne, save me.
Don't grab me, you rat.
Billy, that building opposite, man with a rifle.
Flint! Bigot! Grab that sniper!
Who got it?
Mr. Boyne, Sergeant. He's hurt.
Let me through here, please.
Phil Boyne.
I couldn't help it. I see the rifle. I duck. I grabs Boyne, so he gets it instead of me. It must have been the moose. He's trying to kill me for squeal.
Murder attempt in my office.
Boyne, where were you hit?
I don't know. I call an ambulance. Will you call a doctor? I'm shot. I'm telling you, I'm shot.
Lie still, Boyne. Where does it hurt?
Here's the bullet hole in his coat, Dad. But I don't see.
Is he hurt badly, Ellery?
Can't find the wound, Nicky. Not a sign of blood. Now stop crying, Boyne. What are you crying for? Plain funk, Dad. Nervous shock.
Listen, Boyne. You're all right. You're not hurt. Not even a scratch.
Thank goodness.
But the bullet went right through his coat, Marshal.
Through his coat, Sergeant. Through this cigarette case in his breast pocket. And smack up against this steel vest he's wearing.
No
what?
A steel vest, son?
Yes, Dad, see? Here's the vest and here's the flattened slug. All he got was a chest bruise. Now get up, Boyne. Stop acting like a baby.
Ooh. I'm shaking like a custard pudding.
Look at the rat, Miss Porter. If he was milk, he'd be butter.
Give me a butt, somebody. Give me a butt, will you?
Here you are, Mr. Rat.
Me too, Queen. Thanks. I can use one.
I guess we all can, Counselor. Mr. Boyne?
No, I don't want any.
I'll have one of those cigarettes, Mr. Queen.
Of course, Judge. Mr. Ernie?
Thanks.
Dad? Nicky?
But yes.
Thanks, son. Now let's get back to cases. Are you good citizens going to testify against Musso or aren't you? Miss Wicker.
I can't think straight now, Inspector. Give us a little time.
Time, Counselor. Sir, I can give you my answer now.
Judge, don't be hasty. Let's talk this over.
Okay. I'll give you people just 2 days to make up your minds. No longer. All right, Billy, let him go.
This way out, Your Honor. Come on.
Billy, any report on that building across the street?
No luck, Inspector. By the time the boys got there, the guy that fired the rifle had taken a powder.
I'll never hear the end of this.
Dad, the singing rat.
He's gone.
Huh?
Billy, where'd the rat go?
I don't know, Inspector. I didn't see him.
I guess Brother Rat decides police headquarters isn't as safe as he'd figured.
Fool, now Musso will get him sure.
I advise you to be very careful about this evidence on your desk. Put this fake cigarette in a safe place.
Don't worry, son. I'm putting the moose's monogram butt with that payroll report inside in the thickest vault at headquarters.
You better do it now, Dad. There are 5 desperate people. Judge Lampson, Attorney Wicker, Appraiser Ernie, Politician Boyne, and Musso himself, who will stop at nothing to get their hands on it.
Hello?
Seems to me we practically live at police headquarters these days, Ellery. What's the occasion for this visit to the inspector's office?
Don't you remember, Nicky? The deadline Dad gave Musso's four distinguished co-workers is up this afternoon.
Well, why should that make you look droopy? This isn't your case. Anyway, even if it were, there's no mystery about it.
I know. Just the same, Nicky, there's something wrong. It's been bothering me for days. Can't put my finger on it.
You but... and your imagination. Here's the inspector's office.
Isn't Bailey there either? We'll find him, blast it. Oh, Ellery, Nicky.
Anything new on the Moose case, Inspector?
Have you heard from Judge Lampson yet or the others, Dad?
Ought to hear any minute now. He'd only agree to testify against that slippery mobster. Yes?
Fanny Wicker's here, Inspector.
Musso's mouthpiece. Send the counselor in. Something tells me this is good news. Ah, Miss Wicker. Well, has that smart legal brain of yours looked over all the angles of the corner you people are in?
You win, Inspector.
Ah.
We'll cooperate with the DA, give what evidence we can against Musso, provided we're protected and the DA makes the deal.
That's very smart.
Look
Miss
at
Wicker.
The inspector's face, Ellery. He looks positively blissful.
There's something wrong, Nicky. Something wrong.
Oh, you... Glad you see it that way, Miss Wicker. You're here as spokesman for the whole group?
All except Judge Lampson. His Honor is going to fight, Inspector.
That's the worst decision His Honor ever made. Well, so the moose is going down with the count at last. Out on bail, is he? Not for long. Excuse me. Yes?
Inspector, Bailey.
Bailey, I've been combing the city for you. Where are you?
Central Park. Listen, Inspector.
Central Park. What are you doing in Central Park? Sharing nuts with the squirrels?
Now, listen, Inspector. It's about the moose.
The moose? What's about the moose?
A park cop just found him under a bush with a bullet in his brain.
Look at that crowd of reporters, Ellery.
What, Nicky?
Ellery Queen, what's the matter with you?
Nothing, Nicky, nothing. It's just that I can't get it out of my mind.
Guess what out of your mind? Oh, your imagination again. Meanwhile, that racketeer is lying here in the park murdered.
Yes. Oh, Dad. Well?
Moose got it in the brain, Ellery. He rounded up his gang with a deaf, dumb, and blind.
What was Musso doing in Central Park, I wonder?
Obviously, Nicky, he had an appointment with his murderer. You see here? Bodies lying behind a bush in this clump of trees, and no signs of its being dragged. They were arguing here. Oh, Sergeant, did you find the gun?
Yeah, Maestro. It's the moose's own rod. One chamber's empty.
He struggled over Moose's gun, Ellery, and the other gentleman won.
He's no gentleman.
Dad, how long's the moose been lying here dead?
Doc Brady says he was bumped off sometime today.
He didn't die right away, so Doc says there's no telling exactly how long he lingered.
Could have been murdered any time this morning or early afternoon. Rat it. Have to check alibis.
Dad, look at this.
What, son?
I just found it under the body. This hollow cigarette with the moose monogram on it.
A hollow one? Like the one we got at headquarters?
Isn't there anything in it, Ellery?
No, it's empty. Dad, are you sure the cigarette with the document is safe at Center Street? This looks like the identical casing.
It can't be, Ellery. I locked the evidence up myself.
Just the same, Dad. Let's go back to headquarters and check up.
Could have had two.
Yeah. Didn't I tell you, Henry? Here's the moose's dummy cigarette, just as I left it, in the safe.
Let's see it, Dad. Dad, this isn't a dummy.
It's a real cigarette?
Tobacco, clear through.
My evidence. But I locked the dummy monogram cigarette in my safe 2 days ago, son.
You only thought it was the dummy, Dad. The switch must have been made before you locked this cigarette in your safe.
One of those crooks substituted a real moose cigarette for the hollow one in your office 2 days ago, Inspector.
Exactly, Dad. After showing the document to those people in your office, you replaced it in the hollow dummy and put the dummy on your desk. Remember?
Oh, yes.
They all kept wandering around the office.
Yes. Would have taken only a second to make the switch of cigarettes. Say, I know when the switch was made. When the rat screamed that somebody was going to shoot him.
Right, Dad. And one of them came prepared to make the exchange.
But which one?
They all had cigarettes with them, Sergeant. The judge smoked incessantly. So did Miss Wicker, Mr. Ernie. We know Boyne had cigarettes. His cigarette case was pierced by that rifle bullet.
So any of them could have made the switch 2 days ago.
But how did the stolen one get under Musso's body in Central Park, Ellery?
The thief must have brought it with him today to his appointment with his victim.
Sure.
But I don't understand why he knocked the moose off, Maestro.
It's not hard to reconstruct, Sergeant. The thief, in possession of the vital evidence, wanted money from Musso. Money in return for not handing that evidence back to the police.
Probably intended to milk them all dry, one after the other, and started with the racketeer.
Yeah, and then figured he'd destroy the evidence.
All right. So whoever stole that dummy cigarette in my office the other day is the killer of Musso.
But who?
Looks like a tough one to me, Ellery.
Tough? I don't think so, Dad.
Now, Ellery, don't tell me you know
who... Yes, Nicky. I know who stole the dummy cigarette and murdered the moose. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery, and I hope a solution as well. Nicky, will you be good enough to introduce our guest armchair detectives for this evening?
Well, Ellery, our first guest tonight is Ann Corio, glamorous stage and screen star who is currently making a record-breaking tour of vaudeville theaters from coast to coast. Miss Corio returns to Hollywood soon for her next film, Sarong Girl. Our second guest is Alfred D. McKelvey, prominent Eastern manufacturer and amateur radio detective. You know, Ellery, Mr. McKelvey's hobby is beating fictional radio detectives to the solution, so you'd better watch out. All right, Ellery?
Thank you, Nicky. Miss Corio, who is the criminal?
Well, it's rather difficult, but I think the rat stole the cigarette, that he has been living in terror of Musso, and he did it to bribe him.
Have you any clues?
No, except that when the gun was shut off, he seemed to know just what was happening, and he made quite sure that the bullet hit Byrne and not himself. And I think that was all set up so that he could switch the cigarette.
Thank you, Miss Corio. Mr. McKelvey, who do you think is the criminal?
Well, I've missed some easier guesses than this, so I'll probably miss this. But I guess that Phil Barn did it because of the fact that he showed up in the office opposite the sharpshooter with a vest on so that if there was any poor shooting, he was one fellow that wasn't going to be hit. He also happened to have a cigarette case in his pocket, so he could have been the man to make the exchange in the park. And being a politician, he probably knew his way out in the final analysis.
All right.
Well, thank you, Miss Corio, Mr. McKelvey. You'll know in just a moment how successful you were as armchair detectives. But first, here's Ernest Chappell, a very reasonable man indeed.
Certainly I'm reasonable, Ellery. For instance, when I tell you folks to get two bottles of Bromo Seltzer, one to keep at home, the other where you work, I have two mighty good reasons. Firstly, you never know when a common sick headache will affect you, but you can depend on Bromo Seltzer to help you feel better fast. For Bromo Seltzer fights headache three ways. Acts on head, nerves, and stomach. You get effective relief. Quickly feel more like your old self again. Reason number two for buying two bottles. Right now, there's a wonderful special on Bromo Seltzer. The regular large 60-cent size bottle for only 39 cents. Now that means you save 20% or more. But remember, this offer is strictly limited, both to time and quantity. So act at once.
Tell us, son. Was it Judge Lamson?
Or that mouthpiece and skirts, Fanny Wicker?
That lisping little appraiser, Ernie.
No. The thief of the evidence, and therefore the killer of Musso, was Phil Boyne.
Boyne? That politician?
The one that got hit by the rifle bullet by mistake?
But how do you know it was Boyne, Ellery?
The clue in this case is psychological, but it's as incontestable as a fingerprint. Consider the situation in your office, Dad, 2 days ago. Musso, or one of his henchmen, in trying to kill the singing rat, fired a shot that struck Phil Boyne by mistake. How did Boyne react?
Well, like an old lady. Got his start.
Yes. Boyne was so shocked by his narrow escape from death, so unnerved, that he blubbered like a scared child. Yet when, at the height of excitement, I offered him a cigarette, he refused it.
That's right. He did.
The judge, the rat, Counselor Wicker, Ernie, even you, Dad, and Nicky, were all so shaken by the murderous attack that you gratefully accepted a cigarette to soothe your nerves. Yet Boyne, the man most immediately involved, the man who had actually been struck by the bullet, although unhurt, the man who threw a fit of hysterics, Boyne refused to smoke. Conclusion? Phil Boyne is not a smoking man. Phil Boyne doesn't smoke at all. If he were a smoker, even a light smoker, he would have grabbed at a cigarette in his condition.
But, Ellery, if Boyne isn't a smoker, why does he carry a cigarette case around with him? He did that day. You said yourself it was pierced by the rifle bullet.
Yes, Nicky. Why did Boyne, a non-smoker, carry a cigarette case? Since it wasn't because he smoked, then that case and the cigarettes in it must have served an entirely different purpose.
I see it now, son.
Yes, Dad. We know one of Musso's specially monogrammed cigarettes was substituted for the hollow one with the evidence in it. Therefore, the thief must have come to your office with a cigarette he'd stolen from Musso in advance. In other words, the thief came prepared to make a switch of cigarettes if the opportunity arose. And which of the four suspects did come prepared? Obviously, the man who carried a cigarette case but didn't smoke. Dad, if you'll nab Phil Boyne right away, there's a good chance he still has that document with its precious evidence on him. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Miss Ann Corio and Mr. Alfred McKelvey for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. And we have for both Miss Corio and Mr. McKelvey a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer. Also, an autographed copy of my latest mystery anthology, Sporting Blood, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Ellery, I'm a man who comes to the point.
Chappie, so am I. I know what that point you're going to make, and my answer is you'll have to wait a minute to hear what next week's story is about.
Well, it so happens that I can fill that minute with some mighty important information. You can take it straight from our educated Bromo Seltzer trained friends. The time to try Bromo Seltzer is right now. Listen.
Save money by now.
Bromo Seltzer.
Yes, buy Bromo Seltzer now and you'll save money. 20% or more. For right now, your druggist is offering the large 60-cent size bottle of Bromo Seltzer for only 39 cents. This offer is good for a limited time only, so act at once. Remember, Bromo Seltzer fights headache three ways. These three ways.
Quick relief from headache pain. Fast help for jumpy nerves. Quick help for upset stomach.
So don't be satisfied with anything that does less for you than Bromo Seltzer. Use it only as directed on the label. For frequent or persistent headache, see your doctor. For quick, effective relief from common sick headache, get tried and true Bromo Seltzer. And be sure to ask for the large 60-cent size bottle, now selling at the special low price of only 39 cents.
Save money by now!
All right, Sherlock Holmes, come on. What's on tap for next week?
Funny you should call me that, Chappie.
How so?
Well, because next week I'm going to tell about a case I had which will remind you of one that baffled the great Sherlock himself. It's about a man who goes into his house for an umbrella and disappears. I call my case The Adventure of Mr. Short and Mr. Long. Be sure to listen next Thursday at this same time.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop travels to Bowling Field in Washington. Fox Johnson and Warren Hull will interview men of our Army Air Force. Consult your local paper for the time and station. Music for The Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 7th, 1943 on NBC. This show was broadcast during the days where everything on radio was live, so normally a program heard on the East Coast would hold the cast for 3 hours, hanging about the studio, until it was time for the West Coast version of the program, which was the same script, just broadcast 3 hours later. due to scheduling conflicts, it wasn't until 2 days later that that last episode we heard was broadcast to the West Coast, making what we heard a live East Coast recording. You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from CBS, heard on November 8, 1959. It's the Larson arson matter.
Johnny Dollar.
John, this is Harry Branson, the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Insurance Company.
Well, it's about time, Harry. How come I haven't heard from you lately?
Fortunately, we've had no problems recently. That is, nothing requiring investigation.
Until now, huh?
Well, yes.
So what's the trouble? Arson? Mayhem? Murder?
John, it may be all of them. Unless you're able to put a stop to what's going on.
Sounds interesting. Who's involved in all this? And don't tell me you've been selling insurance to some gangster.
Well, as a matter of fact, he is.
What?
An ex-gangster. At least he was known to have been mixed up with gangsters for several years.
Who?
Bertie Larson.
Larson, huh? Well, at least the name sounds appropriate. So tell me what he's... Wait a minute.
Yes, John?
Isn't Bertie Larson the punk they've had before that special investigating committee?
Yes.
The Committee on Narcotics and Gambling, the one that has the hearings on television now and then?
That's the one.
Well, then, Harry, if you want my advice, you'll cancel his policy, pay him off with interest, and forget him.
I'm afraid that's impossible. What's more, since those hearings began, we've increased the face value of some of his policies.
You have what?
Yes. But now, in view of the threats he's been receiving, threats on his life, his home, his family, well, John...
Baby, you're in trouble.
John... Do you think you can help us?
And get my head blown off by some gunsel? Harry, this kind of stuff I shouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
But don't you see...
In spite of the big fee your company will have to pay me, in addition to my expense
account... just a minute.
At least it'll guarantee me a decent funeral.
A funeral?
But if that's the way you want it, as long as you're willing to pay through the nose for my service...
But, John, I didn't say... John, that is... listen to me, John.
Okay, keep your shirt on, Harry. I'll run on down there and see you.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Insurance Company. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Larson arson matter. Expense account item 1120 for a train to Philadelphia and a taxi to Philly Mutual's office over on Walnut Street. It was late in the afternoon, but Harry Branson, the perennial worry wart, was still there waiting for me, and he wasted no time in getting down to business.
Now, Bertie Larson... Or more properly, Herbert James Larson lives out in Penfield, John.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of part of West Philadelphia, isn't it?
Just beyond. He and his wife live in a very nice one-story brick home that we've insured for some $30,000.
And he must have done fairly well in the rackets and had sense enough to put some aside.
Also, John, we've insured his personal property, furniture, clothes, all the things in the house and so on, for some $20,000.
No kidding. And didn't you say you've increased some of his insurance lately?
To the figures I just mentioned. In the beginning, he was underinsured, but the policies provided for the increase at his option, provided...
Yeah, well, that's all right. You don't need to go into detail.
Provided, of course, that in no event should stipulated coverage exceed actual appraised valuation.
Yeah, well, now, Harry,
if you... In accordance with paragraphs A, B, and G of Article 21 of our standard comprehensive policy...
Harry...
Oh, yes, John. Also, his life is insured with us for $20,000.
Making a total of $70,000.
$70,000, yes.
So if everything goes, including Bertie himself, somebody's liable to collect plenty.
Exactly.
Okay, who's the beneficiary?
His wife, Nora.
I see. And now you say that somebody's been threatening him.
Oh, yes. Ever since he agreed to appear before this investigating committee.
What kind of threats?
Over the telephone, he tells me. Warning him that if he continues to testify, well... They haven't directly threatened his life, as I understand it, but they might as well have. And then last week...
Wait a sec, Harry. Haven't the police been in on this?
Oh, yes. Yes, they have. And for a while, they kept some men stationed about his place.
So, naturally, nothing happened.
But last week, John, when he returned from one of the hearings, he phoned me and said that he'd found a can of gasoline standing on his front doorstep.
Ah, just a hint, huh, of what might happen if he doesn't clam up. Yeah, that's an old-style gang warning.
Yes, a very obvious threat to burn up his home.
But he's continued to appear at the hearings?
Yes, and if he's killed off by these people. If his home is burned out from under it.
By what people, Harry? Has he any idea who might be behind this monkey business?
Well, of course. It must be someone who was involved with him in narcotics and illegal gambling at one time or
another. But he doesn't know exactly who.
Not specifically. He says he never recognized the voice on the phone. And, of course, it was probably well disguised.
Do you suppose he's still involved in the rackets?
Oh, apparently not, or we'd never have sold him insurance. But then who can be sure? The point is, John, that if anything does happen to him or to that home of his, the company will have to pay out sizable sums of money.
Yeah.
Naturally, we don't want to do that.
No.
And if he can be protected properly, well, John, that's why I telephoned to you.
Yeah, but Harry, the kind of protection you seem to want for him is something for the police to provide.
John, I am convinced that the protection they are giving Bertie Larson is wholly inadequate.
You told them so?
I most certainly have. But they simply refuse to listen to me. Well, that is why I called you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Harry, but it seems to me that... Well, okay. Give me his address. Tell me who the police contact is, and I'll see what I can do for you. I dropped my bags at the Bellevue Stratford. Then, having missed my lunch, I spent item 2, $5.25 for a drink and some early dinner. Item 3, $50 deposit on a rental car, and I headed out through West Philadelphia to the address in Penfield. As Harry had said, it was a nice place, not large, but neat and modern, sitting at the end of a new street. Apparently, there was no one home. I looked around to see if there was a patrolman watching over the place. No one. Nothing. And the street itself was deserted. I was just about to swing around and head for police headquarters when I noticed a thin streak of light from one of the rear windows in spite of the drawn shades. Yeah, I suppose I'll learn one of these days not to be so curious. But I walked quietly up the driveway beside the house. And then I heard something. Just a little sound, as though someone had quietly opened or closed a door at the side of the garage in the rear. And I suddenly caught the smell of gas, of raw gasoline. It was coming from the garage. I carefully edged my way on back there, hoping I wouldn't trip over something in the darkness that would give me away. The smell of gasoline was stronger now, much stronger. My next step was into a puddle in front of the garage door. I remember bending over to sniff at it, and it was gasoline, all right. And I remember a flashlight stabbing through the darkness behind me. But as I rose and turned...
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Question, where will you find the leading stars of the entertainment world? Answer, right here on CBS Radio. Gary Moore, Arthur Godfrey, Andy Griffith, Bob and Ray, Art Linkletter, Amos and Andy, and more. The gang's all here. You'll also find the New York Philharmonic and the Metropolitan Opera back on the air. Remember, the star's address, CBS Radio. And now, act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Larson Arson Matter.
I came to in a hospital room, and I had company. One of them was in a blue uniform with brass buttons with the stripes of a sergeant on his sleeves.
So you decided to come back to the land of the living, huh?
The other was a man of about 40, big, beefy. And in spite of his rather flashy clothes, he looked as though he hadn't shaved his fat, truculent face for a couple of days.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad he's okay, Sergeant. Only, how was I to know he wasn't somebody come to carry out them threats against me?
You know, you're lucky you didn't aim those shots at him, Bertie.
Me actually trying to kill somebody, Sergeant? Like I told you, I know the noise it'd bring on the nearest Flatfoot.
Bertie, huh?
Yeah. Gee, Mr. Dollar.
Now, you just take it easy, Dollar. Bertie nearly broke your head when he found you prowling around his home a while ago.
Oh, brother, you're telling me.
But I didn't know, Dollar. I didn't know who you was till me and a cop went through your pockets and seen your identification.
Okay, now look.
And I come home and seen you sneaking around and that gasoline all over my garage like somebody was going to put a torch to it.
Okay, okay, Bertie.
So you can't blame me for slugging.
Yeah, now, Bertie.
I'm sure sorry I did it, Dollar. Dollar, the hospital bill's on me, so live it up, huh?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, now, Bertie. Dollar's gonna be all right, so you go along, huh? I'll check with you later.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Oh, I'm going up in the country to make sure my wife's all right.
Up in the country?
Yeah, up in the Catskills with a couple of relatives, Mac and Josie. Oh, you don't think I'd leave her stay around here with those people on the phone saying they're going to burn me out if I don't stop yapping to that committee?
And you don't know who it is making the threats, huh?
I sure wished I did.
Okay, run along now, Bertie.
No, wait, please.
Well, what is it, Doc?
Well, I'd like to talk to Bertie some more.
Well, sure.
No, not until the medics say you're all right and let you out of here. And besides, I want to talk to you myself. Now, go along, Bertie.
Yeah, sure.
All right, now look, Sergeant.
Just stay flat on the bed, Dollar. And now you're lucky Bertie didn't kill you. And I can't say I would have blamed him. Why didn't you come to me before trying to contact him? I could have given you all the information you need about this case.
Now look, Sergeant.
It'd not only have saved you a lot of trouble, but kept you from getting banged on the head.
Okay, okay.
All you private dicks are alike.
Now listen, will you?
As for that nosy guy over at your insurance company who's been bothering me 3 and 4 times a day, well, now I've got 2 of you to keep from upsetting the apple cart.
What's that supposed to mean?
Bertie Larson isn't the man this investigating committee's after.
What?
Of course not. He's strictly small time. And he hasn't even been that since he served a stretch on a burglary arson rap.
What about the narcotics and gambling that's under investigation?
He was never any more than a messenger boy for the big shots.
Well, now, what's the importance of these hearings?
Now, don't you see? If the committee can hold him up as a guy who talks and doesn't get hurt by him, well, it'll help them flush out some of the others. And who knows? Maybe some of his information might have a little value, and he'd be glad to give it.
Yeah? Why?
Bertie's been trying to run a used car business.
Legitimate? Or is it cover-up or something else?
Legitimate.
You're sure of that?
Dollar, that stupid punk has been so scared since he got out of the clink. And listen.
I'm listening.
The publicity that he's been getting from the hearing, you know, because of cooperating with the committee, why, it's practically made a public hero out of him. Who knows? Maybe it'll help his business enough to get him out of the red for once. That's why he's singing like a canary, probably making half of it up just to keep his name in the paper.
Well, what about the threats he's been getting?
You know something? We've only got his word about those threats. For all we know, he's making them up himself.
Maybe.
Oh, all right, all right. So what if some of his old pals are calling him up, telling him to lay off, huh? They try anything foolish, we'll nab them. Matter of fact, there are a few of those guys around here we'd just love to have something on. So maybe all this will flush him out for us.
Or get Bertie killed.
Ask me. I don't think anybody'd even bother to rub him out.
I hope you're right, Sergeant.
Sure, sure. So, Dolly, that's that.
No,
when you're
wait.
Up and around, come on over to the station and see me. But meantime, leave this to me, will you?
Oh, wait a minute, will you? What about that gasoline he mentioned that was spilled all over his garage?
Oh, one of those shots he fired.
And now, look.
And drilled a hole in a can of gas he had lying around.
Yeah?
Sure, saw it there myself.
Look, Sergeant.
See you later, Dolly.
Wait a minute, will you? Sergeant! There was something all wrong about the whole setup. I'd smelled the gasoline around that garage before Bertie Larson had slugged me. Now, what about the can of gasoline he said was left on his doorstep as a warning? That somebody'd burn him out if he kept on testifying before the Special Investigating Committee. Were the police overlooking that? And then, suddenly, I began to smell a rat, a big one. Don't ask me why. I climbed rather painfully out of the hospital bed, put on my clothes, and pulled the corny trick of going out by way of the fire escape. Luck was with me. The police had left my rental car in the hospital parking lot. I spent on them $4.50 in a bar and a grill for a slug of brandy and some hot black coffee. But I was still feeling pretty rocky, so I took my time driving out to Bertie Larson's place again. As I stepped out of the car, I noticed a light coming from an open window at the rear, and a big sedan back in front of the garage, the trunk of it wide open. Bertie's? Or the car of someone who'd come to put the torch to his home? I didn't have to wait long for an answer. Bertie.
Huh?
Going up in the country, huh, to see your wife.
Oh, Dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Say, listen, now, it's lucky you come by here.
Is it? Lucky for you or for me?
Oh, no, listen, I come by to pick up some things, you know, to haul up to my wife. You know what happens?
Yeah.
When I pulls up in the driveway, there's some guy running away out back. So I yells him to stop, but he keeps on going, and it's so dark I can't see where to throw a shot. And listen.
I'm listening.
Then I smell gasoline. It's coming from inside the house. So I unlock the door and go in, and you know what I find in there?
Go on, Bertie.
Come on. Come on inside, Dollar. I'll show you. Well, it's lucky I come by here. That's all I got to say.
Hey, wait a minute. Were you figuring on moving out of here?
Huh? What do you mean?
Well, now, don't tell me this is all the furniture you keep in this place.
Well, of course not. I sent a lot up to Josie and Mac from where my wife is staying with them.
But if the place burned down, you wouldn't hesitate to collect insurance on all the furnishings, would you?
You're trying to be funny, Dollar. Now, look. Look here in my den. You see? You see where somebody dumped gas all over the rug? Lay them celluloid strips and out over the windowsill so as he could put a match to it from the outside?
Yeah, I see, Bertie.
Well, it's the guy I seen running away from you who was going to burn me out. You see how he broke in by forcing a screen on that window?
I see where this screen was bashed out from the inside.
What'd you say?
And I fail to see any footprints in the flower bed below it. No wonder you served a term for arson, among other things.
Huh? Oh, listen.
I mean the sloppy setup you made here.
What are you talking about?
You've been losing your shirt in the used car business. So it looked like you might have to take a chance at the rackets again.
Are you out of your mind?
But then this investigating committee came along. Talking freely before them gave you an excuse to claim you were getting threats.
Oh, now, listen.
You filled up the insurance on this place to the limit. Then gave out the tale about gasoline left on your doorstep as a warning.
Oh, listen.
All of it. So that when your house went up in flames, everybody would think it was set by the mythical person who was supposed to be making the threats.
You're crazy.
In the meantime, of course, you've carefully emptied the place of anything valuable. In storage with these pals of yours, Josie and Mac, up in the Catskills. If any such people really exist. This home and the garage would probably be nothing but ashes right now if I hadn't come along earlier.
Could have killed you then, Dollar. So
killed
maybe
me.
I better...
I think you were just a lousy shot.
Yeah?
But when all that noise brought the police and you found out who I am, why, sure, you could use me to help build up your case for whenever you decided to fire this place. You thought. But it didn't work, Bertie, because... Oh, no, you don't. Come on, put your hand up. Come on, over your head. Reach, Bertie.
No, listen.
Can't even pull a gun quickly, can you?
You don't need to, Dollar.
Oh, what?
Don't move. I'm right in back of you. Drop the gun.
Kill him. Yeah, Nora. Kill him. We'll fire the joint and get up in a country where Josie and Mac will swear we've been with him all the time.
Yeah, Bertie.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. And listen, we'll strip this guy after you knock him off. They'll find his bones after the fire, and they'll think it's me. That's another $20,000 of insurance to collect.
No, Bertie.
What?
I'm leaving both of you here.
You gone crazy?
After this nice setup, I'd be crazy if I didn't take all I could get out of it. You ready, Bertie?
No, listen!
All right, darling, now it's you.
Drop it, Nora!
Where'd you come from, you dirty...
Thanks, Sergeant.
Well, that's okay, Dollar. But you can be mighty glad that hospital called me up when they found you'd sneaked out on them.
You know something, Sergeant?
Yeah?
I'm mighty glad. Expense account total, including my hospital bill, my room at the Bellevue, and a couple of meals, plus, of course, the trip back to Hartford, $79.75. Remarks? Why bother? From here on in, it's up to the company and the police to straighten things out. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Constipation can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Well, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say. A laxative should be effective, gentle, as close to natural acting as possible, and a medicine that can be used with complete confidence. Now, Ex-Lax has been popular with many doctors and millions of people over the years because chocolate at Ex-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. Ex-Lax is gentle. Next morning, it gives you the closest thing to natural action. And that's why many doctors and millions of people use Ex-Lax with complete confidence. Ex-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity gently. Overnight.
Is Ex-Lax in your medicine cabinet?
Now here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, Sarasota, Florida. A body floating in a bayou. And one too many suspects. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Don Diamond, and Bert Holland. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is Dan Cumberland speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from CBS from November 8, 1959. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great broadcasts from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonia. It's been a pleasure.